Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for this Friday episode. John, we made it.
We made it.
We made it to Friday.
Another Friday indeed. Could you fucking not?
This watch has never made a sound before. I don't know where the fuck that came from. Leave that in. Okay, weird. Apparently
it's 2:30.
Apparently, so. I had a 2:30 alarm set.
All right.
And with that, dear listener, you have all the clues to pinpoint exactly when we recorded this.
Yeah. Well,
I think that's, yeah, no, I think they have enough.
Maybe.
Right in. If you can pinpoint, if you can give us a time and a date.
Well, I mean, I just said what time it is.
But we did not specify the date.
We haven't.
If someone can pinpoint the date, I'll be very impressed.
I won't be. We said mid-September earlier, so like.
Well, okay, then shut up. We're not. No more. Let them figure it out. You don't think the nerds we have listening will love you don't think they wouldn't love
send them on a scavenger hunt?
Yeah, no, God, they're gonna love it. Anyways, we are here. We are talking about minute 134 through 135. It is 2:31 p.m. And we pick right back up with Stilgar and the gang ready to charge.
Still in the gang.
They're back, baby. The big gang. Got a lot more people.
the huge gang.
Yeah. We got the Atreides banners flying high. This is the most intense that we have ever seen Stilgar. The most focused, the most just fucking zen in the moment that we have ever seen him. And then we cut away.
But he's locked in.
Oh God, he is here. We get a shot of the egg, and I think this happened.
Egg,
the Imperial egg. I think we got a little bit of this last minute, but we didn't really draw attention to it. The interference that is happening around the sphere of the egg,
the storm whisking away the shield.
Yeah. And I thought pretty long and hard. About 40 seconds. You know, what would cause this? And it really just looks like magnetic, like interference.
Could be magnetic interference. Could just be the amount of sand in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's coarse. It's rough.
It does get everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's actually a good point. Because if the ship is shielded, which we know it is because the Bashar from couple minutes ago said it's going to interfere with our shields.
Yep.
The individual grains of sand would act as small, tiny little projectiles and interact with the shield that way. And we would see the red of the red / blue or whatever. Okay. That could be a good
theory. But the Emperor's shield is special because it's orange.
It's orange, which is why I thought it was like maybe some kind of electromagnetic interference.
Maybe.
Because, okay, this is a lot of fucking sand in the air. That's basically a lot of rock in the air, you know? Mm-hmm. Rocks are minerals, John. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, they're minerals.
They're Marie. Minerals.
Jesus Christ, Marie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get it. And if you get enough minerals together, they could have a magnetic field. Maybe they're interacting with the magnetic field of the Holtzman generator shield.
Well, we also know that magnetic fields are fucking weird because you have two moons and they cause a lot of magnetic interference, which is why you need a paracompass. You can't it's just true. Use a regular old compass.
Where does it end?
I don't know.
Well, I know where the scene ends.
We gotta get there.
Yeah, okay. Well, the scene with the egg and the magnetic interference ends pretty soon after this because it's a pretty quick shot. And we get Paul, the scene shifts to Paul looking on with Gurney and some other folks behind him.
Most notably, our white bearded Fremen man.
Dude, I had a special note. I was like, I'm fucking jealous of that beard. God, that is a magnificent white beard.
He's had that magnificent beard this entire movie.
I know. And I don't know if it's the first time I've noticed it or what. Yeah,
we talked about him several times.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about him again.
In the cafeteria in Siege Tabor.
Right.
And then we saw him with the whole, what are you guys talking about, scene. And then we saw him after Paul said that he is not the Mahdi. And then Stilgar's like, well, of course he's the Mahdi because the Mahdi is too, like, fucking humble, modest to say that he is the Mahdi.
All right. Well, this dude's beard is still fucking awesome.
And then we got him during the, you know, watch out for the centipedes, the little ones.
The little ones?
Yeah.
The meter long.
He was in the background with Stilgar then. He was also in the background when they were at the tent post harvester attack when Paul got his name Usul.
Is this the best background actor of the movie?
Yes.
Okay. All right, calling it now.
He was also there when they did the recovery of the Atreides family atomics.
Damn, I'm really slacking here. Yeah, okay, well, Mr. Whitebeard,
notably
great.
Not there when Paul regained his consciousness after taking the Water of Life, though.
Okay. Well.
At least as far as I could tell.
No, he's fucking up. I hate him now. You're dead to me.
Dead to me.
No, this guy's beard is magnificent. I'm going to go ahead and say that it's not a dye. That's a natural.
That is a very well kept natural beard.
Oh my god!
10 out of 10. That, if I had to give that beard a shy halud, 10 out of 10.
As perfect, as it deserves.
Yeah.
There's no pepper in this salt. That is pure this salt, is baby.
Pure ionized salt.
So we get Paul and the best beard on earth, or on Arrakis, I should say. And we get them standing, kind of looking on. And then the next scene, the iconic scene of this movie.
Well, hold on. Paul turns to Gurney and he gives, you know, Gurney a little bit of a nod. Like a, yes, a yes, hell yes, yeah. Yes.
Sorry, I was too distracted by the beard.
I understand. I understand. But there's definitely the understanding between the two of them. Mm. And then Paul goes off to rally his fundamentalist troops.
Oh, man. And this is the one where I know that you made sure we either, I think it's just you, maybe I have one in my stack too, I need to remember, but there's definitely some IMAX stills of this scene in the group that you got. An iconic scene of the movie, one that was on just about every promotional material for the movie.
I will say, one thing that I made a conscious effort not to do was watch any of the trailers for Dune Part 2. So I missed all of the promotional material for the movie because they didn't need to advertise to me. I was already bought the fuck in.
Right. I think I watched the first teaser that came out and then nothing after that.
Okay.
I think. It was a long time ago. So Paul's walking up to this ledge and he overlooks like a
sea of people.
Well, no, I'm trying to describe the landscape. It's like a basin or a valley or some kind of like hidden place in between the ridges of the shield wall.
I feel like we need a geologist here to...
Yeah, I don't know exactly what to call it, but it's a low point that is hidden within the mountains. And as you said, thousands and thousands of Fremen are waiting below him, just looking up at his rock. Very Lion King-esque,
mm-hmm.
Right here. And they all start cheering when he walks up. And this is where he gives his...
As you see with any other dictator approaching there.
Sure, 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 sure. These are the fanatics, after all. And Paul gives his iconic, long live the fighters scream. And of course, he does it in Chukotka. I'm not even going to attempt saying it in Chukotka, but he gives the long live the fighters and raises his knife up and they all chant back at him. And it starts this whole big thing.
Somebody starts the wave.
Yeah, they start the wave. There's the hot dog sellers going crazy, just fucking launching.
The guy flinging cans of beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It looks like a fun time, honestly. Now, my only question for this, this short scene is, did his voice sound amplified to you?
It was definitely modified and like,
yeah. Like, I didn't see any microphones on him. And I'm not talking about like...
It could be like theater, though, where they have the one microphone that's like right on their hairline.
He does have luscious hair that could hide that.
He does have beautiful locks of hair.
That's true. I guess, yeah, that's true. I don't know. It just sounded like even within the movie, not just for the audience, like the movie watching audience, like in the movie, his voice was amplified because you can kind of hear it echo.
Yeah, it was definitely like big and boomy.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is him using the voice. I think this is just.
Because what kind of command would that be? Long live the fighters.
Don't die.
I mean, I guess. I mean, as good a time as any to say that kind of stuff, I guess.
All right, everyone, we're all going to have a good time out there. Orange slices for everyone when we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So when Gurney hears the crowd erupt, he turns and says, "Fire!"
He yells, "Fire!" Yes. And we see three missiles just all launch in tandem with each other.
From an unseen location. They just kind of come out from over the ridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just come out from over the ridge. And they are soaring fast towards this egg.
Mm-hmm.
But not at the egg.
Oh, no. And the egg is not the target.
No.
The ridge behind the egg is.
Because, of course, I mean, I feel a little ashamed that I even have to say this, but I'm going to start, you know, we all have to remember the Great Convention. And, you know, it says that if you use atomics against a human, that is cause for planetary obliteration. Yeah. So can't do that. So don't point your atomics at the egg.
Just point them very close and hit a mountain ridge. Let the fallout take care of everyone. As the missiles are being launched towards the egg, we get a camera shot that reverses back looking at Paul's face. And then I don't know what kind of shot it is, but it's like, the camera itself is being pushed towards Paul.
And yes, but right before this, we get a shot of Chani and her crew in the ghost spot.
Yeah, they're all armored up. And
yeah, I don't want, it's a very like 1 second thing, but we can't leave it out.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I was trying to wonder, or I was trying to think, was this like a dolly zoom where the camera, and I think that's what it was, because we don't see a field of focus shift.
Yeah.
Because if it was the camera sitting in a stationary location and they just zoomed in, you would see kind of the background widen a little bit.
Yeah, you get that weird like depth of field change.
Thank you. Depth of field is what I was trying to think of. Like the background would widen a little bit more than Paul's face, but Paul's face would also widen a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we don't get that, everything moves in proportion to each other. I think this is a like a dolly zoom, or the camera is physically getting closer to his face.
Yeah.
And which is the way that they tend to do zooms, unless you're specifically going for that, like you want it to feel uneasy as you zoom in. That's when they'll do the like lens zoom.
And that's what we saw when like Fade was meeting Margot Fenring.
Yes, that was probably a lens zoom and a dolly
and a camera push.
Yeah, at the same time. because you can get that super strange feeling there. Horror movies love that.
Cinematography is,
it's great.
It's an art that I will never like fully understand, and I recognize that. But it's one that I respect the fuck out of, like, any cinematographer that is doing this kind of stuff, because it, to me, it's magic.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know enough to know that they're doing cool things and be able to recognize the cool things. Now, I don't know what they're doing in actuality.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that smart. But, you know, just with my slight photography background, I know how cameras work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's there, the things they can do and the ways, and specifically the ways they can make you feel with the cameras. That's where it get, that's where it becomes less science, more magic.
Yep.
That was a long detour. What happens when the camera zooms in on Paul's face?
We get a white hot flash,
white hot flash,
blinding light. And then
we... Paul's just staring down the barrel of it too. He's not looking away. He's
you should never look towards an explosion for this exact reason. But then we cut to a shot behind Paul as he's stood, and we see, first of all, the shockwave of the explosion, and then the fireball permeating throughout this basin.
Yeah.
And we just see this massive eruption of dust and dirt and rock.
Yeah.
And it's such like the cliffhanger that we have for the end of this movie is such a unique cliffhanger that is only to the shot, because as we're watching all the dust and dirt and rock begin to fall towards back towards the planet, there's a giant, giant boulder that our minute cutoff is right before it makes impact with the ground.
But it's heading directly in the direction of the troops that are on the ground.
Yeah. So we're going to start Monday off with absolute chaos.
That's right.
Before we wrap though, I have a final update.
Okay.
There are now 26 troop transport ships.
Okay. 13 to 26.
13 to 22 to 26.
They did it.
Congratulations. You doubled your troop transports.
There you go. Well, John, as always, no week of the Dune Minute podcast is complete without us giving the official rating of the week.
Okay. This week was a little less exciting for me personally than the last 3 weeks have been.
Okay.
But it is not a bad week at all. Now, you would say, but there's a big ass nuclear explosion. The fight has, you know, kicked off and started. How is that not exciting? And dear listener, to you, I say, come back on Monday's episode, because that's when it gets way more exciting to me. That being said,
sure,
we did get the complete bitchification of Vladimir.
It's a proper use for that word.
Yeah. I was going to say emasculation, but that's not the correct term.
I think one can lead into the other.
It could. We see the subjugation of Vladimir.
Yes.
That's probably the better word. We see the subjugation of Vladimir. We see the fantastic dress that Irulan is wearing, her chainmail dress. We see the reactions of Rabin and Fade to Vladimir's, you know, subjugation. We see, you know, or we hear, I guess, more aptly, Shaddam's interrogation of Vladimir. But to all these points, there's a presence that's missing in this room that is so important.
Small presence, a small, large presence,
a small, abominable presence, as it were. And that really just,
well,
I feel it.
Well, can I try to sway your minutes a little bit, or your rating? I'm sorry.
Go for it.
if we're going strictly by book lore, she would not have been introduced in this week. Alia does not come in until the very end of Shaddam's conversation with the Baron.
Now, I mean, this is the end of Shaddam's conversation with the Baron.
But she comes in as the attack is happening. So she, like, if they were sticking to the books, she would have been entering the room in the last 20 seconds of this movie. Maybe slightly before.
Fair.
So, okay. So I'm just saying, maybe take that off the board. Because
I see that.
And apply it to next week. How's that? Take it off the board and apply it to next week. Because next week is where it actually matters.
Well, I was going to give the week a 7 regardless.
Okay, that's what I was going to give it to.
Yeah, it's still a very good week.
Yeah.
There's just that very small but important presence that's missing. We got to see Stilgar slav squatting with his fistful of dirt.
Yep.
Love that. We saw some pissed off Chani.
As is tradition.
Yep. It was a good week.
It was a good week.
Not as high for me.
Well,
it's a little bit of a dip, but still a fantastic week of Dune.
As always, we could have had more.
We should have had more.
We should have had more, but we had a lot of good stuff.
Yes.
All the things you said.
All the things you said.
Well, they're running through my head currently. The looks that Fade exchanges with Raban.
And with Irulan.
And with Irulan. The tension, the unspoken tension that is in that room.
The sexual tension is palpable.
I mean, it is. You cannot convince me that Fade was not looking at Irulan like he wanted a bone down.
Yeah, no, that's what the was for.
Yeah. So, and I think she picks up on that. I mean, obviously she picks up on that immediately. She knows Fade. She knows who he is.
Yeah. Well, she's also Gaisel and Moheim's best student.
It's true. Speaking of Gaisel and Moheim, we get some hand signals. That's cool.
We get some hand signals, but we also get some glares from her too.
Veiled glares.
Yeah.
We get the cool cameo of the Bashar. That was fun.
I wouldn't say that's a cameo.
Okay. The one appearance of the Bashar.
That was his nice introduction. Because we see him later on.
Oh, that's right. We do. Okay. Yeah. Well, we get introduced to the Bashar. Fucking Shaddam has mic drop moments after every single minute almost this week.
Baron.
And what really put it over the top for me and what pushed me into the sevens, because I was, you know, I've been historically a little bit low over this past couple of weeks, is the shot of Vlad's balls pumping slowly in and out.
Oh my God. All right.
Well, that's really what did it. I mean, hey, listen, in no other week have we gotten that.
Yes, so,
not in that much detail.
Okay.
These are close up underneath shots.
All right. Sevens.
Sevens around. Sevens
around. All right. Anyways. God damn it, Zach. We'll be back on Monday with another exciting week as the action really ramps up here.
Yes.
Of the Dune Minute. In the meantime, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will see you on Monday for more episodes, and have a good weekend.
See ya.